For the introduction. Okay, I'm gonna talk. This is kind of, first of all, I like to acknowledge the collaborators that I'm gonna talk about them. Dr. Sivala Ganatan and Dr. Molavin was a postdoc, a number of grad students, Dr. Singh from McMaster and Dr. Moni from MD Anderson. I believe you know him. And the outline of the talk is I like to talk about, this sort of quantitative approach to study the link between cancer stem cells and various things. Basically, I'm going to talk about treatment strategies and tumor microenvironment. These three and molecular subtypes of GBM, these three are kind of focused on brain tumors. And EMT. And I should thank Dr. Moni for such a nice introduction for me, so I don't need to be worried about the introduction. So let's start. We have seen quite a number of talks about stem cells, so I really don't need to make any introduction. Just briefly saying that our definition is that tumors are initiated and maintained by a small subpopulation of cancer cells, which we call them cancer stem cells, or excuse me, cancer-initiating cells. And these cells are defined such that we need all these cells must be eradicated in order to achieve cures. Not all the cells within a population of malignant cells have this property, otherwise it wouldn't be necessary to define such a subpopulation. And of course, cancer stem cells are responsible for generating all of the cells within the malignant tissue. And of course, it has been recognized in, AML and, a number of, solid tumors by now. We have seen all the talks about them. So traditionally, it is believed that cancer stem cells go through, some sort of hierarchy, starting at the top cancer stem cells with, these properties. They have this property of the sulfonyl. They can go through symmetric and asymmetric division, and as well as longevity. And also, we heard that they divide slowly comparing to the progenitor cells, which they divide, more rapidly, and also they do have a limited number of divisions. They do not have the potential, they have less potential comparing to the stem cells. And finally, at the bottom of the hierarchy, we have the mature stem cells. But it seems that this hierarchy has to be, reconsidered due to this differentiation. Differentiation could be due to the EMT, as we heard, microenvironment, as we saw, yesterday in a talk that hypoxia can, for example, induce the differentiation, and oncogenic transformation. So the idea is that, the idea is that how we can put all these things in, some sort of, mathematical model and try to, compare to available data and extract some information. So I also wanted to add that what I mean by symmetric and asymmetric division is that this is from a paper by Peter Dirks from Toronto. Either a stem cell can go through, this symmetric type of division, which we call them self-renewal, which is kind of, for the expansion, and also they can go through asymmetric division, which then only one of the daughter cells stay, to be stem cells. And theoretically, they can also go through extinction, which is fully differentiation to two new daughter cells, going through two new progenitor, for example. And we know that the symmetry of the, the cell division may be regulated by, various factors, but currently the molecular mechanism which regulate the cell fate decision in cancer stem cells is unexplored. But it is important to, know the characteristic of this, stem cells. So I like to start with the key mathematical assumption that I'm going to make, through this presentation. First of all, I'm going to assume that the stem cells can go through these three number of divisions, which we discussed, self-renewal, asymmetric, and, symmetric differentiation. And I'm going to assume that progenitor cells are kind of in a limited number of divisions, let's say n number of divisions in general, and then I'm going to, of course, fix n. And then after n minus 1 division, they go to fully differentiated cell as 2m cells. And of course, I'm going to consider cell death for both of them, which we hopefully we can fix all these parameters by comparing the experimental data. And also, I'm going to add the differentiation to this pathway. Basically, we can go back to, from this, you know, pathway, either through divisions or just, you know, through simple transformation. But the key assumption that I wanted to emphasize here is that the biomarkers that we usually use, for example, in the case of breast cancer, Dr. Mani mentioned this CD44 high, CD24 low, and in the case of brain cancer, we have CD133. But that's not a perfect, these are not a perfect biomarkers. So we can't really, there are actually there could be early progenitors which have, you know, the same, you know, expression of the, they do have expression of the same protein. So what I'm going to assume is that, basically stem cells and first few generations of the progenitor cell could be, you know, CD133 positive cells, for example, in the case of the brain tumor. And the rest of them are kind of, you know, they have, you know, negative, you know, expression of the, of the CD133. So that, these are the key assumptions to this presentation. So now I'm going to tell you how I want to apply this model to various scenarios. One of them is about the treatment strategy that I mentioned. Actually, Dr. Mani just mentioned about the second strategy as people have started to consider about this, you know, making stem cells to differentiate. For example, in the case of brain tumor in 2006, there was a paper that they consider the application of these bone morphogenetic proteins, BMPs, and they show that it can induce CD133 positive cells to go through differentiation. And basically what happens is that you have more differentiated type of cells, and because we know that GBM cells, the cancer stem cells, usually are resistive to, again, as Dr. Mani mentioned, chemotherapy or radiation, then and an ideal situation would have been to combine these two together and basically applying BMP type of, this is kind of, you know, just an example. There are different, you know, papers regarding this differentiation, of course. So the idea is that to apply this sort of treatment first, make them more, you know, differentiated type, and then hopefully applying the, you know, the radiation can kill more number of cells. But as I will argue later that, and also, you know, it was discussed in the previous presentation, this might not be an ideal situation, because as soon as you leave, you know, a number of cells left, the whole tumor become more aggressive, and there is higher chance of metastasis. So one has to be careful about application of some sort of, you know, this sort of, you know, treatments. Anyhow. But before I'm going to talk about the full, you know, model, I just want to, since, you know, we have also biologists in the room, so I just want to give you a simple description about this model, you know, what does it mean, basically, what I'm going to describe here. So let's assume that, let's just focus on stem cells, okay? So we have stem cells which can go through this, you know, three, you know, divisions, and also I'm going to consider the cell death as well by some rate gamma, which we usually know that in vitro or in vivo experiments that might not be the case, but let's not ignore it at the moment, but I'm going to consider the differentiation. Gamma is a parameter which I'm going to use for the differentiation. I'm going to set it equal to zero just for the simplicity, but everything can be generalized to the case that we do have differentiation. So we know that self-renewal division increase the number. So if you think about a number of, you know, a system which has n number of, you know, S cells, then this, the symmetric division increases that number obviously by one, okay, and the birth rate would be simply rho s multiplied by that probability. So r1 plus r2 and r3 of course has to be equal to one, because the total probability in this system is one. And then we have symmetric differentiation. So the middle one is not kind of important, because this the number of stem cells in the population is not going to be changed. It was, let's say, NS, and it still remains NS. And this one, the number of population of stem cells is going to be reduced by one, okay? So, and then also for the death, the same thing, you know, number of the, we're going to, after a death in the system, the number of stem cells would be also reduced by one. So the first division increased the number of population by one. This guy and this one, you know, decrease the number of population in the stem cells just by one, so it decrease, and then the middle one doesn't change it. So I can put all this information in a very, very simple system. Just assume that PNST is the probability of having NS cancerous stem cells at time t, starting with NS0 cells at time t equal to 0. There are four possible probabilities. For example, imagine that you have an ensemble of, you know, systems which are kind of identical. All of them have the same NS, okay? You can either go from NS minus 1 to NS by creation of a stem cell through this division. You can go from here to here by, again, another division in this system. Or you can go back, for example, because of the cell death or because of this full differentiation to this one and this one. So there are only four possible cases, okay? This is a deterministic approach that I just want to compare with later on. And then you can write these probabilities and you get a simple differential equation. This is just, it just, the only thing it means is that the difference between P and S in the time T plus 1 and T is coming from these four probabilities. So it's really easy to understand that. And as I mentioned, if you just take the, if you just only consider the average cells and assume that the creation or annihilation are kind of proportional to the number of stem cells, you also get this deterministic, you know, simple deterministic approach. Okay? But this equation now can be easily solved, and we can calculate the probability distribution of this number of cells. And then an interesting quantity is 1 minus P0T. P0T means that at time t, there is no stem cells. NS is equal to 0. So 1 minus that is kind of survival. You know, what is the probability of having at least one stem cell in the system after the time t? Okay? You can easily calculate that. This looks a bit weird, but let me consider a simple case. Usually we are interested to the long time behavior. So I'm a physicist, not a mathematician. So for me, 3 weeks means infinity. So I can ask him that he goes to infinity for in vivo experiments, and the survival time is simply 1 minus the ratio of the symmetric and symmetric division. This is symmetric self-renewal. This is symmetric self-differentiation to the power of the number of stem cells that you started with. Now, to give you some idea, what do I mean by all this calculation is that, you know, suppose you have some sort of transformation and the characteristic of the divisions, you know, probabilities are, for example, you have by probability, let's say 0.4, you have one of them, the other one you have 0.3. These numbers are not really important. I'm just giving an example. What I want to make, the point I want to make here is that if you substitute this value here, then the R survival would be only 25%. So it means that even if you start from stem cells, if you have stem cells in the system, that does not guarantee for you that you're going to get a colon, you know, expansion. The only chance that, for example, in this specific case, you only have 25% of the chance of the survival. This is against what we know from the deterministic approach. Because in the deterministic approach, just the system I wrote for you is just a simple exponential growth. So it means that the stem cell should grow exponentially. But that's not the case. So it means that fluctuation in the number of cells is important when you have limited number of cells. Okay, so I apply this, you know, simple model, not this one, the full model, of course, to the scenario that I mentioned when we wanted to combine these two different treatments for the brain tumor. So the blue, the black here is the control case, the blue is radiation, and the green is BMP, and the red is a combination of two. And in order to include radiation and BMP, it's a very simple scenario. Radiation, what it does is it kills cancer cells, so you can just assume that the death rate is, you know, higher when you have radiation. And also, the sensitivity of the stem cells and non-stem cells are not the same. We have to include that one as well. And BMP, what it does is that it makes the cells to become more differentiated. So the probability of differentiation would be higher during the time of the treatment. So using this and comparing with the experimental data, we got these things. So let me just mention a couple of points here. One is that if you look over the fraction of this, you know, positive cells after the radiation, it has been highly enriched. That was the point that I mentioned. If you try to apply radiation or any other treatment, and when, because of the number of, basically you have killed all the cells, and they become kind of more aggressive, and then not only they actually go much faster than the initial time in order to recur the whole tumor. And the other interesting point was that we noticed that when we look over the number of positive cells or negative cells, BMP actually does what we were expecting. It does, you know, the number of positive cells to be reduced quite high, and the penalty was, you know, increased in the number of negative cells, of course. Another point to another lesson to learn from here is that if you actually we mathematically decided not to cure cancer, so what does it mean is that we kind of, you know, left something behind, some stem cells behind, and you will see that as soon as some of them are behind, we're going to go back to the same, you know, number that we had initially. This kind of logistic type of behavior, so that's kind of expected. So that was one area that you could apply a simple model that I described, you know, for you. And this work was published in Cell Proliferation in 2009. The other thing that I want to touch, you know, a little bit is about the tumor microenvironment. Dr. You know, Milosevic gave a very nice, you know, talk this morning about the tumor microenvironment and three important factors like hypoxia, acidity, and elevated interstitial fluid pressure. So, and we know that there has been, you know, kind of, there seems to be kind of interaction between cancer stem cells and the tumor microenvironment. These are just a few examples for you. For example, we know that brain cancer stem cells promote tumor angiogenesis through VEGF. We know, you know, formation of abnormal stem cell niches that maintain cancer stem cells. We know that, for example, hypoxia or acidic conditions, you know, promote the cancer stem cell phenotype. So it seems that there is some interaction between the cancer stem cells and the tumor microenvironment. For instance, this is a paper by, you know, Jeremy Rich's group. Which they summarize that, for example, these are the hypoxic or prevascular or invasive niches that, you know, cancer stem cells, you can see that they like to go to, for example, here in the close to the hypoxic niche, or here in close to this, you know, perivascular niche, or here, you know, the invasive edges. And as I mentioned, HIF or, you know, hypoxia seems to kind of, you know, promote the phenotype of the cancer stem cells. They concluded this based on the fact that, you know, based on the enrichment of the cancer stem cells after exposure to, you know, the hypoxic regime. So I also wanted to see whether we can use our model and try to characterize the cancer stem cells based on the tumor microenvironment. So in order to do that, this is again part of, you know, I'm showing all these details to see, you know, how the biologists realize that what as a mathematician needs when we do the mathematical modeling. So when you guys write a paper, this is the way we go and, you know, try to find some information. At the end, for example, here is some information that we can use to quantify for the quantification. Mammoth cell formation rate, that's one, you know, very useful quantity for different values of pH. This is from Jeremy Rich group again. Or, for example, percentage of the CD133 positive cells, the survival factors, and the pH, you know, in different locations of the tumor. So these are the information that, you know, we gather for the paper. We did similarly with the hypoxic, and we consider all of them in such a nice table for ourselves. And then I want to tell you that how one can, you know, include this tumor microenvironment into the model that I mentioned. And it's very easy to do that. The key assumption is, again, the same sort of model that I had for the stem cells. The key assumption is that the parameters Ri and gamma now depend on the oxygen concentration and pH. So what does this mean? This means that basically, for example, if you are in a normal region, these self-renewal or differentiation rates or the differentiation rate may change, for example, from normal to hypoxic area or from hypoxic to acidic environment. This is kind of aligned what, you know, John Dick was talking about yesterday, that cancer stem cells, you cannot think about them, you know, just like one single, you know, hierarchy type of model. They go also through evolution. So, for example, in this scenario, I'm going to consider like kind of, you know, four type of cancer stem cells. One is when they are, you know, in the normal, you know, tumor microenvironment. If they are exposed to hypoxic environment, when they are in the acidic environment, and a combination of hypoxia and acidity. So there could be, in this case, four different, you know, type of cancer stem cells. Okay. So, again, as I mentioned, I'm going to use, you know, the deterministic filtration. I'm going to call this deterministic filtration, which is the using the result for the fraction of positive cells. Basically, from this model, I can write some simple differential equation for this, you know, pathways. I'm not going to write them down. It's just going to quite, you know, easy, and there are lots of software they do it for you. You can write the differential equations, and then you can compare the fraction of positive cells to try to get some of these parameters. And of course, they are not enough. I'm going to also use a stochastic simulation to tune transition rates using the neurosphere formation rates. So I'm going to use these two experiments. And if you do the experiment, the result will be a bit disappointing at the beginning, because they're not unique solutions. You can find there are variety of cases, a combination of R1, R3, and gamma, and even rho S, the proliferation rate, which all of them satisfy the experimental data for you. So, but what we did after, getting a bit disappointed at the beginning, we tried to cluster them together, and actually when we, all we did was that we put all this data, gamma, R1, and R3, on just, the same graph. And we found something really interesting. You can see how nicely they have been clustered together. So these are the characterization for the normal stem cells. These are for the, for example, hypoxic and acidic environment. This is for hypoxic, and the green ones. So you can see that the differentiation has the highest rates among the hypoxic group, and then acidic and acidic as well as hypoxic are kind of the same. The reason is that if you have both acidic and hypoxic environment, some of the cells may not like it, and the death rate also would be higher. And then, so what we ended up to find is that, basically we got all these parameters, and we noticed that, both hypoxia and acidity promote the differentiation, and hypoxia also increase the self-renewal, which are kind of, this is kind of, along with what experimental observation also, experimental, studies, showed. But I think this was kind of new to see that, hypoxia actually, the enrichment of the positive cells due to the hypoxic environment comes mainly through the differentiation. This is not what you can find in Dr. Reed's paper, but this is again aligned what we saw yesterday, that I'm going to talk about this a bit later as well, that maybe, for example, hypoxic environment make this the differentiation something along the EMT transition again. And also I just wanted to briefly mention about you can also propose some treatment here. Obviously, in order to avoid this, one can consider the idea similar to what Dr. Jane from Harvard suggested about normalization of tumor microenvironment. So if you can apply anti-angiogenic to normalize, for example, the vasculature and the oxygenated, get more oxygenated area, that would help for reducing the number of stem cells in the population. And also, We recently did another work showing that buffering by bicarbonate combined with anti-angiogenic helps to both normalizing both oxygen and the pH profile. So that would be a kind of treatment to reduce the number of stem cells in the population. Okay, so what we did next is that we wanted to also consider some special effect here. So we did some sort of cellular automata simulations. So the cellular automata is basically some sort of simulation that you simply put some rules for cells. For example, you ask cells can divide. We consider again three different type of cells, and we allow each different stem cells to have different characteristics when they are inside the hypoxic regime, acidic environment, or the normal environment. So there are kind of three types, but each stem cell could be different. Of course, I should correct myself. These are not the stem cells only. There are stem cells and the first few generation of progenitor cells. Because I mentioned that we use those experimental data which are based on the isolation of the stem cells or cell sorting are based on CD130 positive cells. And as I mentioned, we assume that not only stem cells but also the first few generation of progenitor cells carry that gene expression. And then also what we do is that we consider cell division, of course, and then if there is a daughter cell, they can randomly move to an empty space. We also consider the pushing so that we let cells, to slightly push each other. We include the extracellular matrix in the simulation, and we are asking at forcing, simple blood vessels around this area. We don't need to consider that. We don't want to discuss the whole tumor, so it's just like part of the tumor, so four blood vessels in a very, very small region, just to see that the effect of the environment on the cancer stem cell population. So this is when you have a homogeneous case, this is when you have a heterogeneous case. The red ones are stem cells, the green ones are non-stem cells. Again, I should correct myself. Red ones are CD130 positive cells, red one, and green ones are CD133 negative cells. Okay? So now what I need to do for this cellular automata, I have to link it to the tumor microenvironment, because this is just, you know, some rules for cell division, but I have to tell them, you know, what should they do when there is oxygen or when there is, you know, acidity environment. So we use a simple, you know, model for cell metabolism. This was, you know, our work recently published in Cancer Research in 2009. So the model is kind of a minimal, you know, cell metabolism model. So we consider glucose, oxygen, CO2, bicarbonate, lactate, you know, and H plus, Na plus, and finally Cl. And then we consider two different type of, you know, metabolism, both respiration, which, you know, we can have 36 of ATP, or glycolysis, which is only 2 ATP. And we also consider, you know, buffering through, you know, this, you know, this reaction. So we just consider one, you know, kind of effective buffering in the system. Then we use this, you know, Cassieri's paper for the to obtain the consumption and production rate for each species, and also we write diffusion equation for each you know chemical. Of course, we're gonna do a steady state, so this is gonna be equal to zero. So this is just a simple diffusion equation. The only thing one has to be careful is that when you have ionic charge or when you have charged ions, the diffusion equation has to be slightly modified. Of course, makes things a bit more complicated, but it can be done numerically. So in this cancer research paper, the idea was that we use this, you know, minimal model, and we wanted to try to explain this experimental data. So the experimental data is again from the Jane group. What they did was that this is a kind of a very nice in vivo measurement in the order of, you know, microscale. So they measure, probably most of you have seen this graph in, you know, various, you know, review articles by Jane's group. So the oxygen, you know, drops, but the pH goes through kind of, you know, plateau in the middle of the around the hypoxic area, and then drops after that. So we wanted to know what is the cell metabolism. Basically, what we wanted to do is that to consider a similar mathematical model, so kind of, you know, a single blood vessels and the tumor cells with some specific boundary conditions, and then we asked, you know, what is the appropriate cell metabolism to produce such a result. So basically, this was the simulation results, and the proposed metabolism was that in the normoxic region, the cell metabolism is partially glycolysis and dominantly respiration. On the other hand, in the hypoxic area, the cell metabolism is kind of a balance between the respiration and glycolysis with a reduced rate of consumption. And in the anoxic, you know, area, which there is no oxygen at all, the metabolism is fully glycolysis. Of course, I should emphasize that this is not the only metabolism that, you know, you can have. Another, you know, alternative, you know, metabolism is that when you have in the hypoxic region, you have dominantly glycolysis, but with a higher glucose consumption rate. Okay. So, but in terms of the cancer stem cell work that, you know, is the focus of this presentation, both of them is going to work. So we use this model for to basically make the connection between the stem cells and the tumor microenvironment. So it's kind of a flow chart. It's kind of, you know, complicated. I don't know if you can read it, but the whole idea is that we want to combine the cancer stem cell model that I started with this hybrid model, which considers the cellular automata as well as the reaction diffusion equation for the cell metabolism. So we have some sort of rules, as I mentioned. If there is enough space, do this or do that. You know, if there is enough oxygen, do this one or do that one. There are some rules for them. But the most important part for us is that, in this specific work, is that the cancer stem cells will behave differently depending on the tumor microenvironment condition. So if it is, for example, hypoxic environment, or if it is normal environment, they do have different characteristics. Okay, so applying these conditions, we find really somehow interesting results. So this is, we could, you know, it's by changing the concentration of the molecules inside the blood vessels, we could have different heterogeneous condition for the distribution of the pH and oxygen. So we can see, you know, variety of, you know, cases. This is just a sample solution. So this is the pH distribution, for example. This is very, very low pH here, high pH here, but the hypoxia is quite kind of, you know, very low here, very high oxygen concentration. And these are the consumption, glucose and oxygen consumptions. And what do you see here, although this CD13 positive cells, it's for among all the different stem cells, there is no distinction in terms of the color for them. But what you can observe is that these positive cells are more toward, are kind of, you know, more distributed in the hypoxic and the pH environment. So these are kind of the niches that I was talking about for these cancer stem cells. And then the non-stem cells part like to be to close to the, for example, very oxygenated, well oxygenated, and well and high, you know, normal pH, you know, environment. And that's the idea that I mentioned about the, you know, the treatment part. So if you can make the, if you can normalize, I don't have the slides, but there was another, you know, thing we did. We kind of normalized this thing and note that, you know, most of these cells would become to be CD133 negative cells, and then you can apply the treatment either by chemotherapy or radiation therapy to get rid of the most of those negative cells. So it seems to me that, you know, it has to be combined with other treatments, and, you know, of course, the, at the end of the story, CD133 stem cells it has to be targeted as well. Otherwise, as soon as a few stem cells are left in the system, they can regrow the whole tumor. Okay. So this was the application that I mentioned about the model and this, you know, tumor microenvironment stuff. I want to move to the next one, which is to ENT. So we just saw from Dr. Mani's presentation that, you know, these CD44 high-low expression cells are, you know, shared by cancer stem cells. And again, I'm going to assume that as well as the first few generation of the stem cells. This is not from their paper, but I just, it's kind of nice and colorful image for a presentation. So this is kind of a mammosphere formation, a mammosphere. So from their paper, we gathered that about 4 out of 1,000, you know, HMLE cells plated form mammosphere formation. So this is, again, the same sort of information that we usually need for this sort of modeling. What is the mammosphere, you know, formation rate? The next thing, again, we found from the paper was, and also he mentioned in his talk, is that, you know, the fraction of, you know, this, you know, CD44 high, CD24 low cells is about 2%. Of course, depends from the experiment to experiment. This is kind of an averaging number. And finally, the average number of cells per mammosphere seems to be around 300. So we use these three information, and again, we ran the, you know, the so-called Gillespie algorithm simulation. The Gillespie algorithm is somehow a simulation for master equation, which was the equation I wrote earlier on, based on the pathways that I mentioned. Actually, there are, again, software for that. If you know the pathway, you can just put them in a software. Chuck Robardi from MIT has a very nice, you know, Gillespie algorithm simulation if anybody needs. And so we use the deterministic and the stochastic, you know, simulations, and try to fix the parameters in the model using these three experimental data. And this is some sort of, this is one, again, sample solution. The red is the stem cells, the blue is the progenitor cells, and the black is, you know, the mature cells for the, you know, mammosphere assay. And in this particular case, these are the parameters that we have used. We usually, as I mentioned earlier, stem cells usually divide more slowly comparing to progenitor cells. And so using these numbers, you can see that there has been a little high, you know, self-renewal parameter for stem cells. So that's why we see a lot of, you know, red cells here. Then what we wanted to ask is that how we can, you know, can we quantify, again, using the mathematical modeling, the results that they obtain in the paper. So they induce EMT through various, you know, methods using this, for example, snail twist or TGF-beta-1 treatment. So And also what happened was that they observed the enrichment of this, you know, fraction of the, again, CD high, you know, CD24 low, you know, cells following the application of these factors. And also it increased the frequency of the mammoth formation. So we had both increased mammoth cell, you know, formation and increase in the fraction of these cells. So they argue that this seems to be like due to the differentiation cells. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that you also did the cell sorting and then you started from CD44 low, CD24 high cells, and showing that they do not have the same property. So then you argue that this could be through the differentiation. Although there is always a possibility of the contamination, you know, somehow there might be, because again, these cell sorting are not, you know, perfect. So what we did was that we decided to consider two scenarios and see whether we can explain, you know, which of these scenarios based on this data mathematically sounds correct. So this is a normal scenario. The first scenario is the production of a stem cells from non-stem cells, basically. So this is through the differentiation, as you know, Dr. Mani was saying. And the other scenario that one can argue is that, as I mentioned, there could be the possibility of some of the CD44 high cells left in the system after the cell sorting. So we wanted to explore that. If you start from just a small number of CD44 high, CD24 low cells, is it possible to explain this data that they got or not? So that was an alternative scenario. So we apply this to their data, and one thing that, you know, is kind of, you know, interesting here is that we consider very different cases. Alpha and beta are kind of the differentiation rate. This is another paper, so the notations, sorry, are not the same. These are the same as gamma, basically, in my previous notation. For example, if you look over the solid line, it was very close to the experimental data based on the scenario one. But what was kind of very interesting is that we always, in the scenario one, we could capture the lack of, you know, the delay in starting the EMT in the scenario one, number one. But if you look over the scenario number two, always, first of all, there are two problems with it. First of all, you cannot explain the delay at the beginning of the treatment. So basically, this what I mean by this delay is that they observed that at least, you know, eight, nine days, there was no this, you know, enrichment of the positive cells. So they couldn't observe EMT at the beginning, and it happened in a later time. So this was not captured by scenario number two. And on the other hand, because we only started from a very, very small number of cells, the parameter had to be chosen very high so that the fraction of number of cells after, so this is the last point that they had in their data, but suddenly increased quite high. So it sounds to be a bit unreasonable to have such a high fraction of positive cells. So, and also talking to Dr. Mani yesterday, he was saying that apparently these E-catenin are kind of very hard to get them deattached. So it takes some time probably for them to, you know, to go through this EMT transition. So I was asking that whether this could be an experimental error or no, but apparently it's not. So I would conclude that the model basically could capture that the scenario one would be the best, you know, model to explain the data. Okay, a few minutes. Okay, so let me just very briefly touch the last subject, which is about the molecular subtypes of glioblastoma. This is the work again in collaboration with Dr. Mani, and it was related to the recent studies that they use this, you know, genetic data using the TCGA, and actually kind of related to the this morning talk about this gene expression analysis. So they kind of mentioned that, you know, these data can be clustered into four different genetic subtypes: mesenchymal, classical, neural, and proneural. Okay? And so our idea was to compare with CD133 signature, subtypes of GBM and EMT signature, which was provided by Dr. Mondi's group, to see if there is any correlation between these, you know, three different groups. The first thing we did was that I have learned not to trust any sort of computational model and do it all by ourselves. So what the first thing we did the reclustering of the TCGA data, and in fact we really saw a very, very nice, you know, clustering profile. This is a bit different the way that they did that, but it was kind of a very, very good, you know, validation at least with a different method. And we observed kind of the genes that we found was very, you know, highly correlated with the one that they obtained. So kind of, you know, and the number of the TCGA data that they used was about 250. The time that we conducted the experiment was about 373. So again, kind of, you know, supporting their, you know, clustering algorithms. So then we got these, you know, genes for these, you know, four different clusters, and also we kind of, you know, used them to get the top genes for the GBMs and compare them with the ENT signatures obtained from different, you know, obtained from Dr. Mani's group. And so there was a very good overlap between the genes were upregulated in GBM and those were, you know, upregulated in ENT. But I, because there is no time, what I want to basically focus is here, which I think was very, very interesting and important point. What we also did was that, you know, we compared the EMT signature with the four different GBM subtypes. And what we observed was that, you know, you can see that these, the red one are downregulated genes in GBM and the EMT signatures, and you can see almost, you know, the same. But what we observe is that if you compare EMT signature with mesenchymal, you know, mesenchymal classical neuron proneural, four different type types, it gradually decreases. So you cannot say that the mesenchymal is highly correlated with EMT, but not the rest. This is kind of explaining, you know, that, you know, maybe cells do not grow fully through EMT. It's kind of, you know, partially, you know, EMT. And then these guys are kind of, you know, more fully, you know, have gone more, you know, fully through EMT transition, EM transition. So that was very interesting result. And also we compared things with the CD3-133 positive cells. I'm going to just ignore this because there is no time. And I'm just going to, you know, stop here, you know, and so you can go through the summary. Okay, thank you so much.